Today is June 27th, 2017. This is Joint Committee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on Human Services. Today is a work session, a continuation of the work session on Senate Bill 5526, and we'll also be doing work sessions on Senate Bill 102, Senate Bill 243, and House Bill 3276. Please keep in mind, folks out there, if we don't get through this agenda, we will be recessing and coming back later this afternoon at 4:30 to complete the agenda. We have a full agenda tomorrow and also on Thursday, again, with the same stipulation that if we can't get it done within the hour and a half, we will be coming back later in the afternoon to complete the agenda. As we have to get out of here. So with that, we'll go ahead and open a work session on Senate Bill 5526 and turn it over to Ms. Byerly.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, so continuing the work we started yesterday on the budget for the Department of Human Services, there are four packets of information in OLIS for you this morning. The first one I'd like you to take a look at is the Child Welfare Program. And I'll just walk through the memo and the spreadsheet that accompanies that. So in Child Welfare, you will notice that the budget over the current biennium is 11.4% higher, total funds wise, and there's actually been a general fund increase of about 18% from the current biennium. And there is an increase over the current service level in this program. So the recommended budget includes the following key budget actions or components. $6 million general fund, $9.6 million total funds is added to increase foster care rates. The base rate should increase by an average of 14%. That's in policy package 108. I would note that that's not quite the level that was in the governor's budget, but based on the work plan for the subcommittee, it was about the best that could be done with the resources available. There's also an increase for behavioral rehabilitation services providers in package 109. Again, that's not as high as what had been requested or what was in the governor's budget, but there's still an increase over the current biennium rates. That should provide an increase of an average increase of 16% to those rates. Then in another package, there's $6.9 million general fund added to provide caseworkers with legal representation. This has been an issue that's been being worked on for a couple of years now about trying to make sure that department caseworkers have adequate legal representation in the courtroom when they're working on juvenile dependency cases. So there are resources added here. Those resources will be adjusted accordingly in the Department of Justice budget and in the session bill, because those changes were not made as part of the department's main budget bill.
Mr. Chair.
Please.
Just as before we go too far, I just want to point out that the behavioral health, the BRS rates, match what we're doing in OYA, so that there's consistency. We just went through the OYA budget yesterday in public safety, as my good co-chair to my right will attest, but I want to make sure that people understood that this was consistent across the board.
So are you saying that we shared the good wisdom of co-chair Jackie Winters?
That would be correct. I just want to be clear that it's on the record that we're being consistent.
But, Mr. Chair?
Yes,
And on the dependency issue, and I don't know whether we actually did a budget note or not, but, you know, some counties are still working with the DAs, and like mine, for example, and I want to make certain that the work and that collaboration continues as we go forward on the dependency case issue, particularly the development of the curriculum and some of those other aspects.
Yeah, we actually plan to have language in the budget report on that, Senator.
Okay, good.
For exactly that, to address exactly that concern.
Thank you.
So, moving on to the bullet on the second page, also in the budget is $3.3 million general fund used to meet federal requirements to take savings accrued to the general fund from adoptions funding coming from federal government and shifted into another funds account. Senate Bill 102 that we talked about last week that you will also hear today is the mechanism to allow this transfer to happen. The bulk of these funds are the department's planning to use those to implement a child care stipend for working parents. And that's one of their initiatives they think will help help foster parents manage the services they provide to the state and maybe perhaps draw some people in who wouldn't be interested if they had the ability to have some of that child care offset. There's also an addition that adds 50 new positions. These are counselor, educator, and trainer positions, and this is an investment that came out of discussion with the agency and stakeholders around some things to try and help with the workforce and try to get caseworkers some mentoring and on-the-job support to help them be more successful on the job. The goal of this funding would be to directly provide training, role-playing, and hands-on support to child welfare frontline workers. In my comments in your work session papers, I talk about new and struggling workers. We'll make sure that we characterize that a little bit differently in the budget report. So we're not trying to set people up to struggle. We want to make sure they get support. That's 44 positions, and it's at a cost of $6.4 million general fund, $9.3 million total funds. The budget also includes $1 million general fund, again, to try and work with the child welfare caseworker workforce for workforce professional development, and another $2 million general fund for supervisor training. The agency will report on its plan for these efforts. It's part of the required interim reporting on child welfare. In the final budget action, there's a very large budget note that includes some interim reporting requirements, and some of that's around child welfare, and we'll be talking about that later. There's also a little bit of general fund, $0.3 million general fund, and a part-time limited duration position to support Senate Bill 243. That's also on the agenda today. That has to do with the expansion of abuse reporting regarding child and care definitions. And then in the amendments to Senate Bill 5526, there's a -1 amendment in OLIS for you today, not captured in these numbers for the Department of Human Services. It will be outside of that. There is a special purpose appropriation to the E-Fund of $750,000 general fund that was designed to help with some initiatives around foster parent supports. So that will be something that our department can work with stakeholders on and come back and make a request for how to best kind of use that funding to help support foster parents. Then within the budget, there are some adjustments to the current service level staffing model. The existing workload model did add, I think, initially several positions. Those have been backed off in the adjustments here by delaying or reducing the number of new positions coming in to address workload, having them start a little earlier in the biennium, that freed up funding that's able to help support the establishment of the CET positions and some of the other efforts in the budget. So again, there are some new resources as far as staffing for the program. Hopefully you'll start seeing some outcomes and improvements from as we move forward into the 17-9 convenium. So those are the bullet points. The spreadsheet, I think most of the things I already talked about, but I'll leave quickly and see if I want to highlight anything. We talked about the rates, legal representation. Again, there were transfers within this into this program from the licensing and regulatory functions we talked about yesterday, some standard adjustments. Vacancy savings have been pulled out of this program, but there was an effort to restore some of that since we know some of the challenges the department has with this program is trying to keep positions filled. So I want to make sure they have the ability to do that with the budget. I think that's everything I wanted to cover as far as adjustments to current service level.
All right, and with that, I'll take a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move the LFO recommendations to Senate Bill 5526.
Co-Chair Senator Hayward has moved the LFO recommendations to House Bill, Senate Bill 5526. Is there any discussion? And Senator Gelzer.
Thank you very much, and thank you to everybody that worked on having some actual investments in a budget that's really difficult this session. I did want to put on the record, though, that while these are really important investments, and I'm really grateful for them, and I think they'll make a difference, I think we made an error a couple of years ago when there was an increase in child welfare positions, and that still only got us to 82% of the workload. I think we have to recognize as we move forward with this and as we have the reports back from child welfare that we have a long way to go to find the resources that are necessary to adequately staff and support this incredibly important work. And I'm just grateful that we were able to do some. But as we talk to the department over the biennium coming forward, we need to recognize that we're asking a small amount of people to do an extraordinary amount of work. And I'm glad there's training dollars in here.
So, and with that, I want to go ahead and just put on the record that I have a potential conflict of interest as my wife actually works in DHS child welfare. So just put that on the record before we vote on this. And the other thing that I would mention, we looked at you know, could we add more positions? It was something that was very important to us. Right now, there are a lot of vacancies with the current allotments that they currently have, so adding more positions into the situation didn't necessarily make sense at the current moment. What we really, I think the focus of the co-chair and myself was to kind of add support for these workers that just have very difficult jobs, which is kind of where we wound up there. And instead of actually decreasing the workload model, we just delayed the implementation, which created the savings to add more of that support. So with the idea, we share the exact same focus that you do, but there is a huge turnover issue, which we'll get into the budget notes. And so both all the senators want to speak. Co-chair Stein Hayward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say, Senator Gelser, I hear you loud and clear, and I think you wouldn't disagree with me that optimally the best thing would be to not need any child welfare workers, right? And that if you look at the total budget for this division, it's $1 billion with a B. We could do an awful lot with $1 billion for early childhood services, for services to families at risk, to help stabilize those families and support them in ways that they turn into successful families that don't need the engagement. The reality is we'll always need some child welfare division, but I hope that it gets smaller and smaller over time because the need diminishes and diminishes. And I'm sure you don't disagree with that. And I don't disagree with your point about workload.
No.
So
okay.
I just want to say that I hope that we continue to move funding upstream to prevent these kids from ending up in child welfare in the first place.
Yeah. Representative Buehler.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair. I agree with both my former senators' comments. I think we're not doing nearly enough on upstream prevention, specifically dealing with the opioid crisis, which is the major driver of creating a lot of problems in our foster care and child welfare departments. And it's deeply disturbing to me that we're not taking on the opioid crisis effectively in the state of Oregon. And the second thing is we're pouring more and more resources into child welfare, trying to use a model, an old model, an outdated model, a model that's quickly failing us. There's fewer and fewer foster parents, and there's more and more foster kids. We've got to look at new models of taking care of these kids because the old models just simply aren't working, and they're going to become more and more troublesome in the future. So I'll be voting no on the budget.
Thank you. Senator Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. You know, I think I stated when we first started our budget hearings on this budget that it would be because of the fiscal environment that we're faced with, that this would be a very challenging budget for human services, you know, recognizing the level of reductions that would have to take place in order to balance the budget. I think I also commented that unlike the federal government, you know, we don't have the choice of having a printing press that we can borrow into the future. Oregon cannot do that. So we have to either, you know, it's either increase revenue or reduce budgets. I want to commend the co-chairs. I know how difficult it is to put a budget like this together, and I want to commend the agency for you know, working with us to make certain grounds. I am, and those of you who know me know I've started the drumbeat about insisting that we have our staff trained with a support system. I would have loved to have had more, but it is the beginning of working to train staff and to give them the support that they so desperately need in this particular agency. So I need to say that, and I because often, you know, we all have our wish list, and the reality of it is sometimes it's just like a family budget. We don't get everything that we desire and we want. And even though we're making some investment, I too would have liked to have made more of an investment in this agency. I look for the day when we no longer will be talking about our abuse and neglect stats are continuing to climb. So, and I think it's something that all of us, you know, share, that of wanting to have our children actually are safe in the state of Oregon. So I do want to thank the two of you and for the DHS staff that have worked with us to make this a budget that we can live with.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I think on the topic of safety, I just really want to thank Clyde Psyche, who has really brought a tremendous amount of focus and effort to the safety of kids. And I think sometimes one of the challenges when you have a really great leader that focuses on transparency, you get a lot of attention for the challenges and the problems, but you can't fix challenges and problems until you see them. And I'm really grateful to Clyde for bringing those out in the open, allowing us to talk about them. And the changes that he has led in the agency in the last 2 years are really extraordinary. And I hope that the legacy that he leaves from the great work that he's done, especially with the focus on child safety at the center and the child safety team, that the whole agency can get behind that, stay behind that, and that that child safety team gets the support it needs from child welfare in the central office and from the folks across the state, because it's incredible work. And I just am really grateful to you, Clyde. Just really, thank you.
You know he's leaving. You don't have to thank him anymore. Okay, but it must be genuine. Representative Therese Alonso-Leon.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I equally want to acknowledge the work that has gone into putting this budget together. Certainly, I wish that we had more money because our kids deserve more than what we are able to give them right now. But a budget is a budget, and I agree with Senator Winters. There's only so much you can do. There's only so many ways you can stretch a penny. However, I am really thankful that this budget does some good work in respect to retaining our professionals in our state and training them. The best and smartest thing we can do is retain folks to want to continue doing the work, because once they leave, that's institutional knowledge, and it costs us more money to train new people and hire new people. So in that respect, I really appreciate this budget and the work around helping retain and train our folks that currently are in our positions. And then I'm glad that we're, going to focus on hiring to fill those positions that are vacant right now. So thank you. And I acknowledge this is not where we want to be. It's definitely an a great intent. And hopefully in years to come, we'll have more funding and we'll be able to do all the things that we want to do. Thank you.
And just with that said, again, I want to make sure the committee notes that the general fund is 17.9% higher. And so given the context of, the overall budget, this actually represents a significant increase in this area, as it was a focus to kind of give the workers the supports that they need to kind of make the improvements that they want to make in a very difficult job. So with that, is there any objection to the motion before the committee to approve the LFO recommendation? Representative Bueller objects. Any other objections? Seeing none, motion carries. Ms. Byerly.
Mr. Co-Chair, the next packet I'd like you to take a look at are the work papers for the Aging and People with Disabilities program. Again, I'll just walk briefly through the highlights in the memo. This budget is also one that did increase over the current biennium. The general fund increase between the legislative approved budget currently and the relevant recommendation is about 17.2%. You'll see in Aging and People with Disabilities and in the next program that these are areas where there continues to be growth in both caseload and caseload costs that challenge the overall department's budget. This budget includes reshoot adjustments. Again, reshoot is basically a recalculation based on recent caseload forecast. You had a presentation on caseload projections earlier in session. This reflects those adjustments from the fall to spring forecast. What happened in this arena is there were savings in community-based care and in-home programs that help offset other costs. And in the budget, this partly allows there to be a rate increase put into the budget specifically for assisted living, residential care, memory care, and in-home agency providers at a cost of $17.1 million general fund, $56.2 million total funds. That's, a 5% increase effective July 2017 and a 2.5% increase effective the following July. Again, those are providers that have also been impacted by minimum wage increases and other dynamics in the employment market that have increased their costs. In the nursing facilities program, There was available funding from the current biennium. There was a nursing facility long-term care assessment funding was, there was a balance of that. We could apply to the 17-19 biennium budget. So there's $13.8 million other funds from that resource that's used in the budget. This is one-time money that will need to be adjusted in this 19-21 biennium. It covers most of a reshoot gap that was in nursing facilities program. Again, that's an area where there has been a little bit of caseload growth as well as cost increases. And also, there's a statutorily set rate, that had to be built into the budget. On the second page of the memo, you'll see that the daily rate for the first year of the biennium is set at $301.70 per day. So those costs are built into the budget. There's also funding in the budget to finish the project and move to training and operations for the centralized abuse management system. This is a project I believe you heard about in the agency presentation that's going to help them improve their data collection and reporting capabilities around abuse, adult abuse. There's two positions that go with that, a policy analyst and a trainer. The budget also, kind of similar to child welfare, includes an adjustment to the current service level staffing model. So in current service level, there are workload models built in to address staffing issues. In this program, that staffing model has been pushed out as far as implementation date. There was also some positions removed from that model used to create six positions to catch up and keep up with facility surveys and corrective action work. Again, trying to redistribute some of those positions to some higher needs, especially in the areas of safety and facility oversight. But this budget plan does include some program reductions. So it eliminates the live-in program effective October 1, 2017. This live-in program is a program that became very expensive with changes in federal regulations around overtime. The department has been working to phase that out. This does continue moving forward. That does save about $4.5 million general fund in the budget. There's also built in to the plan some assumptions around that departments work to strengthen their current assessment they're using for folks in the long-term care system. They believe that as they roll that over time, there's going to be an adjustment in some of the hours authorized clients that will improve or provide some savings over time. That estimate's based at $10 million general fund. They also recently conducted a time study that looks at how long it takes tasks for people to do tasks for clients in-home. That information indicates that there may be some retimings that need to happen or adjustments in what the task times are. There's also some potential savings there. Initially, the department had estimated there was about $20 million general fund in savings, but the plan is taking a more conservative approach to how that may materialize. So again, these are things that we'll have the agency keep you updated on throughout the biennium. And then the last bullet is the elimination of the discontinued home care choice program. This was a program that was initiated with some staff and some one-time general fund seed money. It was supposed to be a self-pay program that allowed private folks to use the home care registry to obtain services. It didn't really materialize or pencil out as far as the number of participants being able to cover the cost. So that has been pulled out of the budget. And just as a note, so, you know, these adjustments tell you what has, you know, what's changing from current service level. They don't really tell you what's still on the budget. I would just like to note that the Oregon Project Independence is still on the budget at the current service level. That has not been modified. There are several other things built in that are still in there. For example, the caregiver training initiative. There are plenty of things still in the budget, even with these reductions in place.
All right, which will take a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move the LFO recommendations to Senate Bill 5526.
Kirsten, I heard it, move the LFO recommendations to Senate Bill 5526. Is there any discussion? All right, seeing no discussion, is there any objection to the motion? Seeing no objection, motion carries. Ms. Marley.
The next packet you have for you today is the program area, Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities. Again, as I noted previously, this is another area where we've got some growth between the biennia. The general fund budget in this program is 19.3% higher than the current biennium's budget. The total funds is a 17.0% increase. It's about 1.5% above current service level. Again, you know, current service level attempts to build in some assumptions around future costs. Not all of those were able to be built into the recommended budget, but it is an increase over the current biennium. Again, just like aging and people with disabilities, there are reshoot adjustments built into this recommendation. I'd like to point out that the reshoot adjustments that came out of the spring forecast did include a workload model update specifically for the community developmental disabilities and brokerage programs. Those workload models had not been adjusted for quite some time and did not reflect some of the workload demands placed on these entities by the K plan in particular. Although there was about $20 million in general fund built into reshoot for that, we're not able to fully fund that, but there is about $5.8 million general fund left to help try to support that workload model going forward. And this is in addition to some other funding that was already built into the current service level. So it's not as high as perhaps people would be expecting, but there's still an improvement as far as the level of budget for these programs. This budget plan also contains some budget reductions. So it eliminates a regional program that's providing crisis services. With the shift of the K plan, the thinking is that more clients are likely to already be receiving services and not the need for crisis placements has decreased, not entirely. The department has indicated they will try to fill the gaps where necessary. They may need to reprioritize internally to help fill those service gaps if we have problems going down the road, but they'll be in communication with you about the approach on that. The family support program is reduced by half. This was something that was identified as a complete cut earlier in some of the co-chair budget recommendation documents that came out. Another cut that had been talked about previously was reducing the agency's ability to use general fund to hold beds while clients are away for a period of time receiving some kind of other services. That has been modified. It caps those bed hold payments at 21 instead of 45 days. It provides a little bit of savings. I think the department's also going to work to see if we can, within some of the Medicaid rules, use some Medicaid dollars to help support this type of activity, or allow a bed hold or a vacancy rate for some of these beds. There's an initiative the department has proposed that would provide some budget savings and an effort to look at some inactive client records and make sure working with CDDPs and brokerages that these clients are being actually removed from the caseload if they're no longer receiving services. I would call this as some cleanup work. And then lastly, what is in this plan is a $12 million general fund and kind of unspecified program reduction. We know the department is working on some things around a new assessment. We believe there may be an opportunity with the federal government to maybe adjust some issues related to the K plan or other eligibility requirements. This is, again, a continuation of the work done in the current biennium around cost containment and program sustainability. It will be something you'll need to have an ongoing dialogue with them on about as they move forward. But at this point, there were no specific actions identified, and they'll be continuing to work on that and provide some feedback on trying to meet that target. And then that lastly, an add to the budget, there was a packet, or a, not a package, but a $13.5 million general fund investment added to give IDD providers a 5% rate increase. This would be a rate increase that would primarily hopefully go on to employees. It's not as robust as the package that the governor proposed, but it is an attempt to try and get some more money out to the employees in that very challenging field.
All right, with that, we'll take a motion.
Mr. Chair, move the LFO recommendations to Senate Bill 5526.
The creature standing here to move the LFO recommendation to Senate Bill 5526. Discussion, Senator Gilzer.
Thank you. Some comments, and also I should probably declare a conflict of interest because my son receives these services and is impacted by the decisions that we make. Again, thanks to the co-chairs and all the things that Senator Winters has said. This is a very difficult budget environment, and a penny can only go so far. There are cuts in this budget that make me very uncomfortable, but I know that we have to make those cuts, and I understand there will be a budget note that we're talking about later around the unspecified $12 million reduction. I just think it's really important that should those reductions come, that the public not see that as something that DHS did to them, that is the budget that we built and that we are directing those, and if that ends up that there is a change to parental income or a change to eligibility, that is a decision that the legislature made and not the governor or the agency. Hopefully we won't get to that place. Disregarding parental income is keeping kids out of foster care and is one of the really good things that came out of the K plan. I know that that developmental disabilities has gotten a lot of attention because there is a lot of growth in that cost. I've been here since the beginning of that conversation, and one of the things we're going to do in the policy committee in September is kind of go back through the history of the discussion around the K plan, including bringing back some of the documents that some of us had provided to the legislature and to DHS when the K-plan was being considered, including the fact that there was no way that we could do this and have it be a cost savings. What we did was take a capped waivered service that only served people over the age of 18 and turned it into an entitlement service that served all people from birth to the grave. There is, and that was based, not capped, that was based on need with a federal law that says you cannot supplant natural, you cannot supplant paid supports with natural supports. So it's really important for us to understand that this is a decision that we made, and these escalating costs are not based on kind of a developmental disabilities program gone wild, trying to pass out services to everybody. You get services, you get services, you get services. It is a challenge to figure out how to meet the requirements of the federal law to still do the positive things that we've done in Oregon around developmental disability services, which is to base everything historically on natural supports and the idea of the strengths and independence of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. But I just think it's so important when we talk to the agency about these costs. We have given them a nearly impossible task by asking them to hold costs to what they were at a time that it was a capped waivered service that only served some people, and we turned it into an entitlement that serves everybody with everything that that an assessment says that they could possibly need. There are good things that have come with the K-plan, I think especially around the services to kids. When I worked at DHS, I was the program administrator for the Family Support Program, which was the only service, unless you were in a waiver, for kids with disabilities, and we had a waiting list of over 2,000 kids. And we did studies to look at all of those kids whose families were having to voluntarily release them into foster care because for not being able to access a $250 lift to lift up a, you know, a 14-year-old kid. And we're not doing that anymore, which is a great thing. So thank you for the work on this. I hope we can continue to look at the cost drivers, but I firmly believe those cost drivers come because as a legislature, we decided to pursue a K-plan that tied intellectual and developmental disabilities to aging and people with disabilities. No other state had done that at that point, and it's expensive. It was an expensive policy choice that we made, and I'm grateful that we have Lilia trying to hold the line. I know she gets a lot of pushback from families. It's hard to get exceptions in this budget, and she's doing a really great job.
Thank you. Representative Buehler.
Thank you, Co-Chair Rayfield. Just checking on the status of the Fairview Trust with this budget.
Untouched.
Untouched. Was preserved.
Is there...
Yeah, we heard the committee pretty loud and clear.
That was pretty clear.
Is there any assurance that the unspecified $12 million reduction, the Fairview dollars will be walled off from that potential reduction?
Mr. Chair, I just need to pile in because this is one of discussion and that happens not all the time in legislative session, but it does occur when we're having budget challenges. So far we've been, except for maybe a couple times, we've been able to actually make certain that it isn't touched. You know, one who has kind of monitored this ever since I've been here. But pretty much we have kept the agreement that we made when, you know, with that trust, and to make certain that the interest earning on the trust actually goes into the services for the intellectually developmental population. So I'm pleased that we've heard that this, again, that the trust would not be used to help general fund.
In direct answer to your question, Representative, our intent is that no, that $12 million would not come out of the trust. They think that is pretty much the clear intent of this committee, the clear intent a lot of the stakeholder groups that met with the co-chair and myself.
And I see Ms. Tennedy nodding over there, so she gets the message.
And it would require statutory change to take the money as well.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So with that, we have a motion for the court. Well, motion before the committee.
Somebody's back at his other job.
So to accept the LFO recommendation, are there any objections to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries. Ms. Byerly.
All right, so the last packet on DHS for you today is kind of the agency wrap-up packet. So just an attempt to sort of aggregate all the stuff you've gone through over the last couple of days. So overall, if you want to look at that table on the front of the memo, the total funds budget is 5.8% above the current biennium's budget. But however, the general fund, a proportion of that has increased by about 14%. The overall general fund budget is still below the current service level. And again, this is an area where you might hear from people about the budget being adequate. Again, I think it's a much better position than it was in some of the initial work done in the Big Co-Chair plan. So attached to this is a work session spreadsheet showing the changes for all the department. It's this sheet right here. It's got the numbers I just talked about, and it shows you again by program where the programs came out with budget and funding. This is the information that has been captured in the Dash 1 amendment to the original bill. What I'd like to talk about now, I guess we can go if you want to make a motion on the actual budget. Total budget numbers, I guess.
Sure.
I guess that's what got next in the memo. Sorry.
Okay.
Jumping ahead.
All right. Mr. Chair, I move the LFO recommendation to Senate Bill 5526.
And that's with respect to the adjustments to the current service level.
Yes.
So Co-Chair Senator Steiner-Hayward has moved the LFO recommendation on the adjustments to the current service level for Senate Bill 5526. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Please note Representative Buehler objects. Seeing no further objection, motion carries. Ms. Byerly.
And the next section is about performance measures. So the performance measure report is at the very end of the packet. And so I'd like to, so we had some discussion with the agency about performance measures during their public hearings. I think you heard from several of the programs that there was a desire to revisit some of the performance measures. There has been a lot of internal leadership changes in the department. I think there's some new folks that think some of these measures could and should be improved. So you're going to see in the chart that the targets for 2018 and 19 have been updated. And then at the bottom of that worksheet is a recommendation kind of on what the agency is supposed to do going forward. So the LFO recommendation is to approve the key performance measures and targets as proposed. There were three new measures as part of that recommendation, and they replaced number 2, 16, and 18. Those are really to TANF stability, a measure on the abuse of seniors and people with disabilities, and then there was a placeholder for service equity, and the department has put a new service equity measure in for that placeholder. Some of these new measures do not have reporting data available yet, but that will start being collected in 2018, and then we will continue to refine targets going forward based on that data. Then toward this overall effort to kind of relook at KPMs, the recommendation is to direct the department to review existing key performance measures for all programs and propose change for 2019-21 biennium as needed or based on legislative feedback. Please note the current customer service KPM should not be modified as that is a standardized statewide measure. All agencies have the same measure. And then specifically, because there's been a lot of conversation around child welfare, there's direction that we'd like to see some measures related to child welfare workforce retention and training. The agency's directed to propose at least two KPMs that will help measure results in this area, such as measures around turnover rates or the number of annual training hours received. And we'd like the agency to be able to distinguish between sort of measures around new workforce, again, new caseworkers coming in and how they're doing as opposed to some of the workforce that's been around longer. And then again, we know that agencies also has a pending agency head change as well as some of that internal changes. We know they want to relook at the current measures for possible improvements. And we'd like to have the department's directed to provide a written progress update to the Legislative Fiscal Office by February 1, 2018. And depending on both kind of the workload of the committee in February and where they are with that progress, we may have them come in during February and give you an update in committee. But we'll work with them over the interim. Again, these would be measures that they would propose as part of their 19-21 budget request. And Legislative Fiscal Office will work with them on that development process.
All right,
let's see if
that.
Mr. Chair, move the LFO recommendations on key performance measures.
Co-Chair Steiner here would just move the LFO recommendations on key performance measures. Senator Gelzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just noticing, and I realize these are the performance measures for this biennium and the idea that new ones will come back. But I hope that maybe data can be kept by child welfare and that number 18, the disparity in achieving permanency. The other group that's not listed that has a very disparate permanency rate are children with disabilities and mental illness. These kids tend to languish in the system for a long time, end up moving into APLA or permanent foster care, and that is really problematic, with some families even being told, I want to adopt this child. You can't adopt this child. They're unadoptable because they're disabled. If we could address that, that would be really helpful.
Thank you, Senator.
Yeah, Representative Bueller.
Yeah, I think we're not asking enough of the agency, and specifically the new metric number 16, abuse investigation. I don't think it's enough just to track the contact time. I think we need to be tracking exactly when these kids who there's abuse reports are actually having someone in the field and making contact with them. There's some improvement that needs to be done here.
And we can ask them to report back on that. If that's something that the committee wants to do, we could easily do that.
I would say they can include that in the work they're going to provide me before February.
Yeah, and that sounds like a good
idea. And Clyde is nodding his head, even though he won't be the person.
Right. And Mr. Chair, a lot of those are in the dashboard report as well. So we ask for those in the policy committee. We've been asking for a lot of that data and putting them in OLIS. What are we doing in terms of face-to-face contact, time lists of initial contact after an abuse report? So I think sometimes, even though it's not in the KPM, mm-hmm. we have a whole variety of ways that we can keep that kind of data right in front of us.
That's very helpful. So thank you. With that, so motion before the committee. Are there any further discussion? Any objections to the motion? The Representative Bueller objects to the motion. Seeing motion carries, Ms. Byerly.
So the next section of the recommendation is about budget notes. There is a very large budget note in here, and the reason it's so large is we had a lot of discussion working on the budget around wanting the agency to keep you all updated on lots of things. But we've narrowed this down to three big areas for them to work on. So I'm not going to read the full budget note into the record. I'm just going to point out what the purpose is. So what this budget directs the agency to do is to come to every interim meeting of this committee or the emergency board, subcommittee on human services, depending on who's meeting, at what point in the interim, to provide an update on three big areas. One is on child welfare. So again, there's been some resources added. We know there's changes going on in the system. We want information about how that program is working. Are there improvements in areas like turnover? How are we doing with recruitment and retention? So this part of the budget note is really about the child welfare program and how it's doing in the current biennium. My guess is it will probably be working in the interim, the policy committee on the same area, as I'm looking at Senator Gelser. And then for the first report, we really want them to provide sort of a dashboard or a set of data that you can continue to look at over the course of the biennium, and we'll work with them to sort of develop that framework for future meetings. The other thing we'd like them to update us on is kind of, I think something Representative Bueller mentioned earlier, is sort of this, we've got this Unified Youth and Child Safety Implementation Plan and process that's supposed to be working on the system and coming with recommendations, and I think it'd be good for you to have some insight into sort of what that progress looks like, and is that really moving to some different changes for the program in the future. So that's the child welfare component of that. Then, for intellectual development disabilities, there's also a component where they will come talk to you about this effort to try and manage to that $12 million general fund reduction. There's some information here about trying to have provide you feedback on process or ability to work with the Medicaid Authority on some changes, pursuing alternatives, trying to get the new assessment in place, and up by June 1st or July 1st, 2018, and then they'll come and give you an update on that. And then we wanted to make clear that there were some concerns about eligibility changes around parental income and other eligibility changes, and we'd like them to make sure they're communicating with you with regards to those specifically if it looks like there needs to be a change made to those moving forward. Again, a lot of dialogue, a lot of interaction with the agency. Then the third part of the budget note is around position management. So we've had some conversations around vacancy rates and turnover and vacant positions, and trying to work with the department to try and identify perhaps some long-term vacant positions to eliminate. It's clear that right now there's a lot of churning. They've got positions double-filled to help manage positions elsewhere. So this part of the budget note is to try and work with them to kind of clean that up. They've already started this effort. They've been making some progress. In fact, since February, they've made some progress, but that continues to be a need going forward. So we'd like them to continue to work on that and report back to you on how that progress is being made there. So that was the first big mega budget note.
The budget novel.
The budget novel, yes. Do not say that again.
Not novel, long form nonfiction.
This should not be a trend.
Chapter 2, Ms. Byerly.
Chapter 2. So, the next budget note is specifically related to something we talked about yesterday. It's the movement of the alcohol and drug child care program from early learning division to the department. It did not come with any funding. Child care development funding is not able to be used for that. So this was some direction for him to look at that program and report back to you in November on their ability to manage those children and their families within their current programs, and give you a sense for what that looks like from their view. I believe some of these programs or some of these clients are already within some of the services DHS provides. So that's what that second budget note's about.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move the LFO recommendation on budget notes.
Senator Steiner Hayward has moved the LFO recommendation on budget notes. Is there any discussion? All right. Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing no objection, motion carries.
And then,
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I do think it's important to point out that big joint budget note that we're going to be doing with Valley Representation. You want to talk about that later, Ms. Byerly?
I can talk about it real briefly. Just
okay.
There's another budget note that will be actually in the end of session bill that's related to the legal representation and the task force on childhood juvenile dependency that will be affecting the agencies involved in that process. So that's forthcoming as part of the end of session adjustments.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, LFO is recommending a budget of $3,106,909,923 general fund, $551,495,145 other funds, $5,323,633,179 federal funds, 8,224 positions, which is equal to 8,080.44 FTE. These are the changes that are reflected in the Dash 1 amendment. The agency does have its appropriation grouped in some groupings to facilitate accounting and other activities within the department's budget.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move adoption of the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 5526.
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward has moved adoption of the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 5526. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing no objection, motion carries.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 5526 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward has moved Senate Bill 5526 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection to the motion? Please note Representative Bueller objects. Were you discussion or objecting?
I'll just comment.
Okay, yeah, Representative Bueller, please.
Again, just want to reinforce that my objectives is centered on my concerns with the Child Welfare Division. I think we're not seeing enough innovation. I know it's troublesome, it's difficult, but we've got to try new models. We've got to work on prevention and the ability to track foster parents to meet the increasing demand of the foster kids is just not going to play out with the current model. We've got to try something different. I don't see enough innovation. But I would like to thank Clyde for taking on the role. I know it's difficult, especially with the troublesome history of the agency and your emphasis on transparency and trying to turn things around, especially at this stage in your career. I greatly appreciate that service.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would just say one thing. Given the transitions that are happening, have happened and will continue to happen in this agency, my co-chair and I are committed to working very, very closely with the agency in the interim as part of the budget development process. We don't want to be sort of just swooping in during the long sessions to do this. So one of the reasons we've asked for so many reports back, one of the reasons we plan to be meeting with the new director so regularly, all those kinds of things, for exactly the reasons that have been brought up here. We think there's a lot of opportunity for the legislature to stay more closely involved on the fiscal side as well.
Senator Winters.
Mine is to say thank you to our staff, our legislature staff, mm-hmm. you know, who comes to us with experience and knowledge and patience. And it's experience and knowledge in both program as well as fiscal, and I say that because we couldn't do our job up here without them, and so you know I think they deserve a lot of kudos for us. from us. Some of our staff, and I know Ms. Laurie has been here, she's another chronologically advantaged individual who's been around.
I get to be chronologically advantaged too.
But no, she's been here for a while, and she's she's seen the good when we're in good economic times, and she's seen when we're not in such good economic times. She's seen when legislatively we piled on every program we could think of. I think we have to remember that, and I try to caution my colleagues, because we can get in the business of micromanaging the agency infinitum, and I see some heads bobbing out there, and then we wonder what's happened to the agency. So I know that our staff tries to keep us focused and into reality, and recognizing, as I said earlier when I came in, you know, they're getting their direction because they know that we've got to stay within the budget box. And not just our budget box, but it's also our budget box affects the other budget box. Because, you know, our choices are, actually very limited, and particularly when you find that over 95% of the budget goes to human services, education, and public safety. So I want to commend them. I think they all come and help us a lot, and I don't know how you have the patience of dealing with all of us sometimes, but thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion? All right. So with that, the motion before the committee is to move Senate Bill 5526 as amended to the full committee with the unanimous recommendation. Is there any objection to the motion? Representative Buehler objects. And also, please note that Representative Hayden has been excused for all of these votes. With that, motion carries. I'll go ahead and carry it to the full on the House floor. Senator here will take it to the Senate floor. With that, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 55.
Do you want the budget notes in the pony?
No. No, that budget novel? No. You can read them. We can remonstrate to see if we can do it in within 3 minutes on the House floor.
We only get two.
You get 3 minutes for remonstrance? We only get two.
No wonder their floor sessions take so long.
Oh, my God. I apologize for distracting you.
All right. So we have 20 minutes and three bills to get through. We'll go ahead and open up a work session on Senate Bill 102. Ms. Firely.
Okay, so Senate Bill 102, Mr. Co-Chair, is the bill we had a public hearing on last week. This relates to the setting up the other funds account to allow the department to take general funds.
They don't like us anymore.
Oh. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Well, they don't like us anymore. They're
there's more things on the agenda, folks. We should have done those first. All right.
So all of you care about these other bills. Thank you for sitting through their bill first.
Nobody cares about child care. I see how it is.
Bill sets up the other funds mechanism or account and statute to allow the department to take general fund savings that's been accrued because of increased federal participation in adoptions program and put it in this account. So this is the mechanism that sets up the account that we've budgeted a $3.3 million transfer to in the budget.
Okay, right. Mr. Chair.
There are no amendments recommended.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 102 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Stan Hayward has moved Senate Bill 102 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? All right, seeing no discussion, is there any objections to the motion? Seeing no objections, motion carries. Senator Winters, would you like to carry that to the full?
I can take it.
All right. And to the Senate floor?
I can take it.
Representative Malmstrom, we'll just start at the end and work in. Would you like to carry this to the House floor? Done. All right. We'll go ahead and close the work session on Senate Bill 102, open up work session on Senate Bill 243.
Okay. Senate Bill 243 is a bill you also had a public hearing on. This is about expanding the definition for children in care to relate to foster homes and developmental disabilities residential facilities. There was a fiscal impact associated with that that's been built into the budget recommendations, and there is no amendment recommended for the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Senate Bill 243 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Stein, I heard you move Senate Bill 243 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Thank you.
Seeing minimal discussion, are there any objections to the motion? Seeing no objections, motion carries.
My turn for full.
All right.
Can take it to the Senate floor.
I think Gelzer would love to take this.
I would love to take
this to the Senate floor.
Thank you.
On this side, Representative Alonso Leon, would you carry it? Okay, excellent. Thank you. With that, we'll go ahead and close work session on Senate Bill 243, open work session on House Bill 3276. Look who's here. Thank you, Ms. Byerly, for
Thank
all
you,
your
Ms.
wonderful
Byerly.
Work on the
really
DHS budget.
And your piles.
Here's the other hard worker. Pile.
She develops good muscles during session. Our LFO staff group. Hello, Ms. Ames.
Please, Ms. Ames.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, House Bill 3276 prohibits insurers from restricting coverage of health services necessary to combat disease outbreak or epidemic, and it also directs public health to convene a task force for a number of issues. You did hear this bill not very long ago, so it's still fresh. There is a small cost to the Oregon Health Authority, but indeterminate. It'll depend on how many people they have on their group and the scope of the work that is ultimately undertaken.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3276 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Stana Hayward has moved House Bill 3276 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, is there any objection to the motion? Seeing no objection, motion carries. We'll go ahead and have
Representative Nathanson's bill.
So maybe we can have you carry it to the full.
And then to the Senate floor, and she can take it in the House.
Yeah, and we'll have Nathanson carry it on the House floor. With that, we'll go ahead and close the work session on House Bill 3276. That concludes our work for today. Ms. Ames, do you want to
Mr. Chair,
update the
committee? Were very quick today. Nobody wants to come back at 4:30.
Nicely done.
If I may, colleagues, the chances, we are not coming back today. The chances are very good that we will be back at 4:30 tomorrow and Thursday.
But I will warn you that the House may have floor from 4 to 5, and the full may be coming back tomorrow at 5, so we may have conflicts.
And we will keep everybody posted, but we've got to get the work of the committee done by whenever we finish on Thursday.
Each day that the bills are posted, we got to get them.
We have a bunch of bills posted for tomorrow. As soon as Eric gets out of here, he will be putting all the materials up, so they'll be available for your review.
And we've never thanked Mr. Sorensen for all of his good, hearty work throughout the session.
Mr. Sorensen's awesome.
Just know it's called chop, chop, chop. Everything's speeding up.
We're working on it.
So with that, we'll go ahead and adjourn the meeting. Thank you.
I turned on my volume and I'm like, holy cow.